This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Toastmasters Podcast. My name is Beau Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
We got a great show for you today. Ryan, why don't you tell them who we will be speaking with?
Sure. We're speaking today with Ms. Ellen M. Kozak. Ms. Kozak is a Milwaukee-based copyright, publishing, and media lawyer. She's the author of numerous articles. Her books include Every Writer's Guide to Copyright and Publishing Law and the prize-winning From Pen to Print, The Secrets of Getting Published Successfully, both published by Henry Holt & Company. And most recently, the Everything U.S. Constitution book from Adams Media. And Ms. Kozak has also written an article in the Toastmasters magazine entitled Copyright in the Internet Age. Ellen Kozak, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome,
Thank
Ellen.
You. Pleasure to be with you.
Great to have you with us, Ellen. Now, some of our listeners may be thinking, copyright, why is this topic of interest or even being discussed on the Toastmasters podcast? So to maybe give us a little context, could you please give us some thoughts on why Toastmasters should be concerned about copyright?
Well, I think the evolution of how things, how speaking is conducted nowadays, there's almost nothing that you can say that doesn't wind up preserved forever on the internet. So if you're going to borrow from someone else, it's going to show up. And things that you might have said off the cuff in a private or a small conversation before are very likely to be recorded by someone with a telephone and or with a one of those phone cameras, and all of a sudden there you are on YouTube.
Yeah. I never thought of that. Dangerous thing, the internet.
Right.
It can be, but if you're quoting from someone without acknowledging where you got your quote, or without permission, or if you're using pictures or anything else without the permission of the author, you could get into trouble because something that you would never have gotten caught at before, you can get caught at very easily now.
Right. I wonder if somebody records you out of context. That is, if they just record the part where you actually are quoting from, but they didn't record the part before when you said, this is a quote from, would you still get in trouble? Or is that kind of a strange loophole?
Well, you could be. Everything is relative, obviously. But I think the other thing is there's a great deal of ignorance out there. And I remember when Timothy McVeigh died and he used a quote from the poem Invictus, and people were giving him credit for having written it, which for heaven's sakes he didn't. It was Franklin Delano Roosevelt's favorite poem.
Right. Right. Interesting. Yeah. I know Bo and I both have a lot of kind of little, well, what about this situation things we want to ask you about. But maybe just to give a little bit more context for us, I know, as I said, you're based in Milwaukee. You're a lawyer here in the United States. And my understanding is that your practice is focusing on copyright here in the U.S. But I know that this information will have an interest to our international audience outside the United States. So could you maybe just touch on how this information will help our international listeners?
Well, most copyrights are covered by the Berne Convention, which, and most countries in the world are signatory to the Berne Convention. So chances are, even though your own country's laws may seem somewhat different from American copyright law, basic copyright law follows the Berne principles. And in that respect, the copyright belongs to the author of a work. In fact, many Berne countries have greater protections than the United States does.
How realistic is this, though, if there is some kind of violation? Let's say I wrote something original, somebody in Uzbekistan copied it. What can I do?
Well, you can always bring a lawsuit in if you have the money and go to World Intellectual Property Organization, and this is another thing that you can do. But mostly you write them a letter and say, please stop. Mm-hmm. The thing is that what you don't want, if someone's borrowing your work, it can be an annoyance, it can be a real problem, and if it gets to be really aggravated, you can bring a lawsuit. But if somebody catches you borrowing somebody else's work, it's your reputation on the line.
Okay.
And if if you are the one who is known for having borrowed without giving attribution, you just lose your reputation.
Right, right.
And you're not in Uzbekistan.
Right, right, exactly. It might not be as bad as you actually getting sued, but losing your reputation could be even worse in some cases for some people.
Well, if it's clear that you're borrowing without giving acknowledgement or something right. of that sort and using other people's work, you've seen this happen where there are a lot of lawsuits. Now, some of them are unfounded, but where somebody has a best-selling book and people come out of the woodwork and say, you know, I did all the research for this and this was my writing and I never signed it over and they're not giving me credit.
Ah, right. Now, if someone does find themselves in a situation where they've, let's say, inadvertently violated someone else's copyright, would the copyright holder, I know each case is different from case to case, but generally, would the copyright holder go right to a lawsuit or would they maybe
do
some kind of cease and desist? Okay.
But the problem is that you don't inadvertently steal from someone else. You know if you're plagiarizing. Now, some things obviously have become part of the language, and if you use a quote from the Bible or from Shakespeare, chances are you don't even have to attribute it because people are aware of where it's come from. You
right.
know, if you say something like, in the beginning, obviously it comes from Genesis.
Right. Well, how
but
about...
I guess what I'm suggesting is that if you're going to be using someone else's work, it's just as easy to say, as Charles Dickens once said, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. If something is original with you and it doesn't have another source, mm-hmm. then you can own your own copyright in it, and you don't have to do a copyright search if you think you wrote it for yourself. But if something is out there and it's in public. And it's been heard, like, on the radio. I'm thinking in terms of, you know, like the song Born This Way. I mean, everybody has heard that song.
Right.
And it's very hard not to have heard, you know, Lady Gaga at some point or another. So it would be very difficult for you to say, oh, well, I just assumed that I'd written it.
Right.
You know, and there are things that are out there. But you have to prove, in other words, you have... for there to be a copyright infringement, and copyright is different from plagiarism, but for there to be a copyright infringement, you have to have had access to the original work and have used it without permission. Of course, if the work is quite old, then you wouldn't need permission. If it's usually the life of the author plus 70 years, give or take, depending on what country you're in. But so if something's over 100 years old or over 150 years old, you don't have to get permission because it is in the public domain, but that goes back to the attribution. Because obviously, you don't want to be using it as though it were original. You want to give acknowledgement to Charles Dickens or Shakespeare or whomever else.
Right. Mm. Right. You know, it's funny that you mentioned Born This Way because it wasn't there some kind of, I don't know if it was an official lawsuit, but some kind of controversy because that song does sound a lot like one of Madonna's songs. And that brings up an interesting question. It's at what point, and I think you mentioned this before, it's all relative kind of, at what point is it actually copyright if it sounds very much like something else but isn't exactly,
that's not the test. If it's original with you,
right,
and you haven't seen or heard the work that ostensibly is being copied, I mean, if you've written a song,
right,
and you have never published it, you've never played it for anyone, and the most that you've ever done is sort of, you know, tinkered around with it on your home piano, and someone else, you know, like Madonna or someone comes out with a song that sounds very much like it, clearly she hasn't had access to your song.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't copy you. So there are, but if your song was actually out on the radio and got some play for 6 months internationally, and perhaps it's on YouTube, then you might be able to make an argument that there was access. The test for copyright infringement is access plus substantial similarity. And what is substantial similarity? That's a good question. It's always relative.
Okay.
Huh. So I guess what one thing I'm getting out of this is if someone copies, I'm going to say copies, if somebody produces originally an idea...
No, copyright doesn't apply to ideas.
Right. That's a more intellectual
to the
property.
Expression of ideas. Copyright is all in how you express it. The thing is that copyright is not just words or music. It also includes pictures and photographs and cartoons and things of that sort. So if, for example, you see a cartoon and you think this would be a great thing to put up on the board during one of your speeches, you may have a problem with that because the cartoon belongs to whoever is the copyright holder.
Right. I think a lot of people, maybe as they're spicing up their PowerPoint slides, think, oh, I'll just go to Google, I'll search on the images tab and just, and may not even have any thought that they're doing anything wrong by yeah. using images on the internet. It's the internet, it's free, right?
Right.
Well, not really.
Exactly.
And this is one of the other things, is if you pick up someone's, you know, pick up a cartoon from someone else and put it up in your presentation, even with attribution, as I said, somebody could come along with their iPhone and take a picture of your speech incorporating that photograph or that cartoon and then put that up on the on YouTube, which again is a violation perhaps of your copyright, but you are caught red-handed, you know, using someone else's copyright.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's play with that example for a second. Let's say somebody in their Toastmasters club does a speech, another member of the club videotapes it, and they have used a cartoon on one of their slides that's copywritten without permission.
Copyrighted.
Copyrighted, thank you. Without permission or attribution. From the a plaintiff's stand of point of view, what harm or damage has been done to them as a result of their cartoon appearing in this person's speech on YouTube?
Well, a lot of it depends. I mean, you know, you have the value in something because you can resell it. So if, for example, you've done a cartoon for The New Yorker and then they decide to put it onto T-shirts, mm-hmm. you will get extra money for the fact that it's on T-shirts. And if they, you know, somebody decides that your cartoon is so amusing that perhaps it should be animated, then it has another new whole new life as a basis for an animation. So if someone else is sort of, you know, piggybacking on that and using your character or your cartoon creation, it becomes a monetary damage. You're losing money. Perhaps they're using it in a context you wouldn't use it. What comes to mind is there was once, and the lawsuit was actually brought by Charles Schultz, there was once a cartoon used, someone decided to draw a pregnant Lucy from Peanuts mm-hmm. as part of an advertisement for a birth control clinic in Madison, Wisconsin, I believe it was. And let me tell you how fast they stopped that, because it reflected poorly on what the Peanuts characters were, even if they had been sympathetic to this particular birth control clinic.
Right.
Lucy being pregnant was not what, you know, they wanted to show as part of the Charles Schultz family.
Right.
That's a great point. In fact, one of the points I wanted to ask you about is if there was more room in the realm of like satire, parody, impersonation.
Well, there is, but it has to be satire of, you know, this is where people don't understand that, you know, parody of the actual characters. If you found that, you know, Kermit the Frog was somebody that you wanted to parody because you thought that the Muppets were perhaps too saccharine or something like that, which I don't think they are, but I'm just saying if that's what you thought, then you could do a parody and you would have to, of course, incorporate something that was Kermit or Kermit-like in order to do it. But if you were using Kermit the Frog to satirize the governor of your state, that doesn't hold because it's not a parody of Kermit, it's a parody of something else. Uh-huh. And then you're using that character without permission.
Mm, gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, so it's a very subtle kind of a line, but what, you know, where you can use parody is not where you think you can.
Right. Well, what would you say, Ellen, to a Toastmaster who's thinking, you know, I'm going to give my speech. Yeah, I've got, let's say, some images or maybe an extended quote from someone else that they're going to incorporate into their speech. And they think, well, you know, this is for an educational use. It's in a Toastmasters club. It's a nonprofit organization. I'm sure, you know, a lot of those things
those
don't necessarily mean anything. So how would you counsel them?
Those are not exemptions. If it's in the public domain, if it's a poem from John Dryden from, you know, 400 years ago or something, you can probably use it as long as you give the quote. If it's something from a contemporary poet like Richard Wilbur, you would have to get permission probably to use it, and chances are the permission would be given to you. The danger, as I said, nowadays is with the internet, because where you used to be able to get up and give a speech before 30 or 40 people and it would go no further than that one presentation, mm-hmm. it now could wind up on the internet or being recorded in the archives of the Toastmaster group forever and ever. And, you know, as I said, everything seems to be forever nowadays.
Mm, yeah. You know, another example that occurred to me was someone maybe doing a play on Martin Luther King's speech. Now, my guess, I don't know if you know this off the top of my head, but my guess it was fewer than 70 years ago that Martin Luther King passed away. So I'm assuming there's a copyright.
It's not more than 70 years ago.
Right. So I'm assuming there's a copyright.
The copyright is not only there, but it has been protected.
Okay.
And, you know, the family has actually asserted protection over the I Have a Dream speech, for example.
Okay.
Now, that actually antedates the current law, which is now life plus 70 years. So that the law at that point was is now reaches 95 years, but you're still within the 95-year protection period.
Okay.
And they have actually brought suits against people.
Oh, they have.
Yes, they have.
Okay. As I was thinking of maybe a concept of a district governor or maybe a president of a Toastmasters club giving their own version of a I Have a Dream speech, which is their dream for their Toastmasters district or club. And if, it, you know, everybody clearly would know it's a nod to Martin Luther King's.
Well, it becomes a derivative work at that point. And that's the question is, you know, one of the things that is reserved to the owner of a copyright is the right to prepare derivative works based on the original work. Derivative works are anything that derives from it. So it could be, speech using the same pattern. Right. It could also be, when you have a derivative work, I think one of my favorite examples of a derivative work is that there was a novel that the movie MASH was based on. And based on that novel, there was a movie of MASH. Then there was a television series of MASH. Then there was a spin-off television series of After MASH. And then there were all those T-shirts that said 4077th that were all derivative works. That's merchandising rights that comes out of the television series that comes out of the novel.
Hmm.
So all of that is variations on a derivative work.
Hmm.
And, you know, how far-reaching a derivative work can be depends on what you can do with it. If something becomes a hit, I hate to think what, you know, at this point, what the merchandising rights are for the Twilight series, for example. I'm sure that you could probably buy official Twilight fangs. I'm not sure.
Right.
Yeah. It was kind of interesting that you mentioned Twilight as well. When I was in Italy just last year, there were movies that were complete and total knockoffs of Twilight with the same guy and girl vampire, but they looked a little bit different. And I immediately saw that and said, this has to, and they were selling them at gas stations, by the way. So
well,
I figured there has to be some kind of underground
thing
going on there,
because
I can't
be legit. You know what? I think Twilight is derivative because there was once a series called Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, Buffy was in love with Angel, and Angel was a vampire who was reformed.
Mm-hmm.
So think about it. I think Twilight may be a ripoff.
Right, so it all comes down to having a good lawyer and being able to argue it, right? Your point of view.
You know, if you're different enough,
right?
So there are certain things that become what are known as sans affair. In other words, all cowboys wear spurs on their boots.
Uh-huh.
And so, if you want to sit there and say, "Well, I invented the idea that cowboys wear spurs," well, you know, I don't think you could really, you know, say something like that and keep someone from using it.
Sure.
If somebody's wearing a 10-gallon hat and he lives in Texas, and I think you would have, you would just sort of assume that this is sort of an iconic figure that anybody would copy. On the other hand, and there's also the variation of a Romana Clef, which is something that is based on real life. You have to be very careful when you get into these, though, is how far you're stepping into other territory. And again, there are other rights besides copyright. There is plagiarism when you're not really violating a copyright necessarily, or perhaps you are, but you're not attributing your source, so that you're using someone else's work and pretending it's yours, or giving the impression that it might be yours.
Sure.
There's also the idea of invasion of privacy. If you tell a story that is pretty much based on your neighbor's life and it's recognizable, you may be invading their privacy.
Yeah.
If you distort the story and make it look like your neighbor murdered his wife when he didn't, you could be open to defamation suits. So there are all different items. Also, there are certain things that are protected by trademark. And trademark is another area of law that is international. And there are marks that are known as famous marks. And, for example, Mickey Mouse has become a famous mark. And let me tell you, the Disney studios do come down very hard on people who do parodies of Mickey Mouse, or who use Mickey Mouse in advertising for something that is not affiliated with Disney. And I can see why they would. They once prevented a nursery school from putting up pictures of Mickey Mouse on the outside of their walls. But what if this was a nursery school that was doing, so, you know, molesting the children? You wouldn't want anybody to think that Disney was in any way, shape, or form affiliated with them. So you can understand why they would be protecting their trademark.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Geez, you're really scaring me here. It sounds like I just want to shut up and stay in my office and not communicate with anybody. Should I feel that way,
I think it's just a matter of honor. If you know that what you're creating is original with you, if you want to borrow from others, if you ask permission before you do it, you can probably get the permission.
Right.
You might have to pay. You might not have to pay. It depends on what the context is. And some people say, "Oh, go ahead. Go right ahead and do it." This leads us into the area for perhaps of fandom, where, as an homage to certain things that become very popular, people who really like that, let's say it's Star Trek or Star Wars or anything of the sort, will create their own Star Trek or Star Wars stories. And how far the studio will let you go with your own fanish stories that are distributed perhaps among just a few fans or even more than a few is a good question.
Right.
One of the things that kept Star Trek going during the hiatus between the television series being on the air and the first Star Trek movie was the fact that the fans had conventions and did their own fan writing, because there was no more Star Trek except the 99 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And or maybe 69, I can't remember how many episodes there actually were. And so Gene Roddenberry always said that the fan support was the lifeblood of the movement. But nowadays, with everything out there, people want to control these things, and I think perhaps rightly so. It sort of depends on, you know, on what you're doing and how people feel about it. When Star Wars first came out, Lucasfilms seemed to be very inconsistent with what they were preventing people from doing. And it turned out that some of the stories that they were getting the cease and desist letters were the stories that had Luke and Leia having a romance, but people didn't know until the second movie came out that they were brother and sister.
Ah, interesting.
You know, the Lucasfilms knew it was going to happen, but nobody else knew.
Right,
right. Yeah. Wow.
So you would get a letter saying no cease and desist, and somebody else would have written the story and wouldn't get that letter, and no one could figure out why.
Right.
It was slightly inconsistent, but they had their reasons for it.
Right.
And if you get it, and again, you're dealing with a 500-pound gorilla. If you get a letter from somebody like Disney or Lucasfilms and they say cease and desist, you'd better, because they're bigger than you are.
Sure.
Right.
Sure. Right. They'll crush you in an instant. They don't care.
Well, not so much that, but you really don't want to take on fighting them in court.
No. You wouldn't win.
Even with Ellen Kozak on your side.
Ellen, this has been great. This is a great article. I think many Toastmasters will find this information very helpful. Again, I hope that they don't get a little bit too scared, kind of like I'm feeling. I think that...
Well, you shouldn't, you know, you should be able to use things. Just
right.
If you went, and I'm sure you, you know, anyone who has been through a university knows that you always attribute where your sources are.
Sure.
Yeah.
And if you cite your sources, you don't have a problem. And if things have become part of the language to such an extent that, you know, that everyone will know that you're borrowing from it, then you don't have a problem with it. So it really isn't a problem. Where you have your problems is when you upload a bunch of photographs or cartoons to illustrate something for yourself, when you're incorporating someone else's work, when you're writing an outgrowth of someone else's, it should have been their right to control the derivative work, whether it's created or not. Then you could have a problem. But essentially, you don't really have a problem for the most part if you're just conscientious about attributing where you get your source material.
That's clear enough for me.
I can see Bo relaxing right before my eyes here, Ellen.
So why don't you tell us quickly about your book?
Which book? The copyright book?
Which one would you like to tell us about?
Well, that's a good question. The copyright book is out of print right now. I'm thinking of bringing it back.
But okay.
It's still available on the internet if you get the third edition. And it's pretty much up to date, except that the fees have changed a little bit, and you can now register copyrights online.
Okay.
The Constitution book is the most recent book that I did, and I did it last year. And it is what I hoped it would be, because I've gotten some reviews back that said this, that it's a very neutral book that very much explains how the Constitution works and what it is. And there's an awful lot of people who think they know what's in the Constitution who really don't. And the point of this book was to make it easy for people to understand the Constitution.
Right. All right. Well, this sounds great. Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it. You have great information, and I'm sure all Toastmasters all around the world will appreciate and use this information. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.